Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this grain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Are you ready to get rowdy? Well, if you're listening to Mad Science, and I think that's the reason why you came here, maybe just to get a little bit rowdy. So, carbon scam is ripping you off. I want to get into this today because this is probably the biggest scam in the history of scams from the start to finish, but nonetheless, it's just I'm starting to believe that people really like being scammed. I'm starting to think that people are gluttons for punishment. So I want to start off with this nifty statement right here from a voice you might recognize.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Now let's hear that one more time, because I wasn't sure that I heard him correctly.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Well, third time's a charm. We got to hear that one more time. I know it's like rubbing salt into the wound and such, you know. It's like beating a dead horse. But still, pay really close attention to what that man said.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, that consumer's you. You're going to be the one paying for that deal right there. That's a nifty little debacle. All for you. All right, let's see here.
Of all the horrendously bad ideas on energy, this one takes the cake. It's called the carbon tax, a combination of everything big and bad. Big government, big corporate influence, big deception, big job losses, and big taxes on all of us. The newest organization pushing this dopey and dangerous idea is called Americans for Carbon Dividends. Right away, you know you are being scammed when the promoters of an idea destroy the meaning of words. It's a tax, the definition of which is just about the opposite of a dividend. The basic scheme they are promoting is a tax on carbon producers, such as refineries, mines, oil and gas production, and shipping. These taxes would flow to the government, and then the feds would give the money to you. Tra-la-la, what could possibly go wrong? In a word, everything. When the carbon producers are taxed, those costs will simply be passed on to consumers. And since energy is part of everything we do, it means everything will get more expensive. Liking this idea yet? Wait a minute, the promoters of a carbon tax assure us that the government will return that money to us in a rebate check. That's the dividend part. But that begs the question, why make everything more expensive just so the government can give some of what we spend back to us? Well, they say, this is what we must do to fight climate change. The idea is, if fossil energy costs more, people will use less of it. But that's not entirely true. People who can afford to pay more for energy will mostly keep using it as they always have. But the poorest among us, those who spend the highest percentage of their income on energy, will get hammered.
Yeah, you and I.
It's the poor who will forego that road trip to grandma's and keep the house hotter in summer and colder in winter.
Yep.
But carbon taxers say the poor will get more money back than the middle and upper classes. Okay, so what we've got here is another wealth redistribution scheme. Of course, anyone who has ever witnessed government in action knows that there is a giant cost to any program bureaucrats administer. Just think about all the waste, fraud, and abuse in our income tax system. A carbon tax will work much the same way, except the government won't be directly taking money out of your paycheck. Sneaky, isn't it? And what would American manufacturers do if it suddenly got much more expensive to build things in the U.S.? That's right. Some of them would simply relocate to other countries or go out of business because they can't compete with companies outside the U.S. that have less stringent environmental regulations. A study commissioned by the National Association of Manufacturers found that a carbon tax would destroy between 4 and 20 million American jobs. A carbon tax is one of those things that the more you look at it, the dumber it gets. But carbon taxers say if that's the case, why are big corporations like ExxonMobil and Shell getting on board? Why do you think? Several large U.S. cities and the state of Rhode Island have filed lawsuits against U.S. oil companies using climate change as a pretext to extort money. Think tobacco settlement. These companies are being promised they can't be sued if a carbon tax is enacted, so it's a low-cost insurance policy. Other rich people and corporations are supporting the tax because it's a no-cost way to virtue signal. The big money behind Americans for Carbon Dividends knows it's going to be a tough sell. The organization expects to spend $10 million in the first year alone and won't even try to get the plan introduced in Congress until 2021. That's quite a commitment, but they know large-scale public deceptions take time. Mm-hmm. Prepare yourself for loads of carbon tax BS in the months and years to come.
Yep.
For the Clear Energy Alliance, I'm Mark Mathis. Power on.
Yep, that's it. We're getting started here. All right, so before that, let's go right to this one right here. Is carbon trade a scam? Of course it is.
Hello and welcome to the show at our new time. I'm Anand Madhu, sitting in for RizCon. Many weapons have emerged over the past decade to combat global warming, but perhaps none is more controversial than the idea of carbon trading, where polluting nations can buy credits from each other and from poor countries, basically to continue polluting. The idea was supposed to be simple: stick a price on carbon so that individuals, companies, and governments could trade it like stocks and bonds. Polluting nations can buy offsets from nations that don't pollute as much, allowing the richer companies and governments to continue polluting. On the other hand, companies and governments in industrial countries now have a financial incentive to pollute less.
So it's a financial incentive to pollute more or whatever, but so it's basically a solution with no solution. Yeah, we're going to charge you extra money and we're still going to pollute. Yeah, that's it. Here we go. Let's keep going.
Yes. So today we ask, is carbon trading a false solution to the problem of climate change? Remember, you can join our conversation with your questions and comments. You can send an SMS or email, and of course, we also welcome your phone calls on the show. Joining me today is Daphne Wysham, the founder of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network and board member of the Institute for Policy Studies here in Washington. She's also the co-host of Earthbeat Radio, which airs on 54 stations in the United States and Canada. Dr. Joseph Rome is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and editor of Climate Progress, a website that focuses on climate science, solutions, and politics. His upcoming book is Straight Up, America's Fiercest Climate Blogger Takes on the Status Quo Media, Politicians, and Clean Energy Solutions. And from London, Patrick Burley, the chief executive of the European Climate Exchange, the world's biggest exchange for companies, banks, and hedge funds to trade permits to emit carbon dioxide. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Daphne, let's start with you. Cap and trade is a regulatory system whereby a government sets limits on the polluting emissions, if I could put it that way. That's the cap. And then, of course, it allows utilities and manufacturers to trade pollution credits or allowances. Mm-hmm. In your view, is that the best way to combat climate change and global warming?
No, and it's not just in my view. I mean, I think if you look at the evidence, pre-Kyoto, we had roughly an increase of 1.5% in greenhouse gas emissions.
Of a cap-and-trade system.
Kyoto, post-Kyoto protocol.
The electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
An increase of roughly 3% overall.
Yeah, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad. Because
trading
I'm capping greenhouse gases.
We've seen
coal power plants,
EU emissions trading scheme.
You know, natural gas, you name
up,
whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to.
Power producers, the nuclear power industry,
retrofit their
and
operations.
Unfortunately, prices have also
money,
gone up for average people. They're seeing their utility bills increasing. So, unfortunately, we're continuing with this scheme in all the approaches that are being considered thus far in the U.S. Senate. They involve cap and trade in some form or another. And what we're saying is, you know, when you crash test a car and it crashes, you don't go at a much higher speed and do the same thing again. That we should really be thinking
under my plan
about why this particular model is failing.
Well, let's go to Patrick Hurley in London. He is the chief executive there of the European Climate Exchange Weather System.
What I say about whether coal is good or bad.
We just heard Daphne Washam tell us
that there's been more pollution
since the system has been implemented.
Coal power plants.
What has been the European experience?
Natural gas. You name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to.
The experience here in Europe. I mean, in Europe, the system which has been going. Just standing back, Europe is the only place in the world where that have actually gone ahead with putting in place mandatory caps on the amount of carbon that can be pumped into the atmosphere on a national level. So all 27 European member states have committed to the same system of capping and then allowing trading. And really we have to emphasize always that although there's a lot of emphasis on trading of carbon, the system is really all about the caps. It's all about setting a limit on the amount of carbon that can be pumped into the atmosphere and slowly over time reducing the limit over
time.
Under
my plan, the cap and trade system.
As a result of that, companies who are able to cut their emissions quicker than the trajectory
that's
been set between the scientists and the politicians, they are incentivized and able to sell their additional credits to those companies who are not producing at the required pace. But as long as the overall reduction of all companies added together throughout the system is effective, then the target of reductions will be met through the system. And the European example, which started under the Kyoto Protocol at the beginning of 2008 and runs through until 2012, is and will continue to hit the targets which were set at that time, which in the European case is an 8% reduction in the amount of carbon being pumped into the atmosphere by 2012, and that's an 8% reduction from the 9%
you fall on. Options for doing so, either you're going to put in a shrinking cap that government regulates and create a rising price, or you're going to put in some sort of government regulations that tell industries what they have to do. The thinking was that if you create a market-based mechanism, that the free enterprise system will figure out the most cost-effective way to do it. Either approach has its weaknesses and its strengths, but I think by and large the European trading system has worked pretty well. They've achieved the reduction, they're on path, track to reach the reductions that they have said that they wanted to achieve. Most of those reductions, virtually all of them, are going to be reduced by domestic reductions in Europe rather than
electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
I'm not the biggest fan of the so-called offsets.
Regardless of what I say about
we have such a big global warming problem
because
the planet is heating up. Last decade was the hottest decade on record. We're seeing droughts and wildfires.
Cap and trade was on the assumption that
the science says
that
global warming is caused by
that will cost money.
Is that not indisputable?
I think that it is indisputable. I mean, if you go straight by the science. I mean, I think that scientists haven't done a good job of explaining this because scientists spend a lot of time. Scientists become famous working at sort of the fringes of science, but the basics are very straightforward. Because of greenhouse gases, the natural greenhouse effect, this planet is habitable. We're 60 degrees Fahrenheit warmer because of greenhouse gases. But now humans are pouring billions and billions of tons of extra heat-trapping greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and I don't think that you would find any serious climate scientist that would dispute that more greenhouse gases trap heat. And on our current emission path, if we kept doing nothing, radically change this.
So he said more climate scientists, you wouldn't find any that would disagree or whatever, and it's trapping heat in. I'd like to know where this heat is. Seriously, it's colder than the polar bear's booty outside, man. You know what I'm saying? And it's supposed to be warming up is what I heard. But listen to this again.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, you. It's going to pass it on to you. That's right. Let's keep on rolling there. So, if you notice, I've been playing under his plan quite frequently throughout this entire deal. And it may be obnoxious, but it's kind of like, you know, driving the point home, man. It's cold outside. It's real cold outside. And they keep saying the planet's heating up. And whenever the planet gets cold, then they call it climate change. See, it's global warming when it's hot. It's climate change when it's cold. And when the weather's going cruddy, well, then it's climate disruption. So, anyway, let's keep rolling.
Climate.
I wanted to just return to something that Joe Rome raised, namely the issue of carbon offsets. Some people have coined the term rip offsets to describe just exactly what's going on with carbon offsets. And one of the reasons they're considered rip offsets is because they're virtually impossible to verify. The U.S. Government Accounting Office has actually said they're impossible to verify, and yet in the U.S. House and Senate bills that were moving forward, we had 2 billion tons of carbon offsets, which would have meant the U.S. could have done absolutely nothing that was verifiable until roughly 2030. And they could have counted it as an emissions reduction. So they could have said all those dams that China is building, all those maybe waste-to-energy facilities in India, we're going to count those as clean energy, and the credits will count towards our goals. Now, when the gentleman who's speaking on behalf of the European carbon market suggests that they've met their goals, I would say, you know, what share of that has come from carbon offsets? Because to me, they are the most problematic, the most corruptible, and they're one reason why the price of carbon is as low as it is today.
Okay, Patrick Burley, do you want to respond to that?
I can answer it very clearly. Across Europe, one is allowed to use up to 12%, or an average of 12% across all of the European nations. Your reductions are able to be supported by offsets from developing nations. And I have to say that, just going back to what Daphne was saying, you need to define what an offset is, because offset is being used as a very generic term. The offsets that we allow here in Europe are only offsets which have been approved and gone through the extremely difficult process of verification through the United Nations FCCC system, which is an extraordinarily difficult system. I agree with Daphne that there are definitely offset projects out there which don't have additional impact. There are definitely some rip-off artists in the marketplace, but those credits are not usable in the European scheme. So you have to look at the quality. You can't use offset as a generic term. The credits that have been coming out of the UNFCCC are extremely difficult to achieve, and they have to prove that there are additional reductions in the developing countries that have been achieved as a result of their existence.
Can I just give one example of offsets that have been approved by the UN CDM board, the Clean Development Mechanism board? One involves gas flaring in the Niger Delta, which is totally illegal. It's against the law. It should have been phased out decades ago. However, we now have an oil company, Eni, an Italian oil company, that has succeeded in getting approval for ending gas flaring, which is illegal, and getting carbon credits for ending that gas flaring under the CDM. This kind of activity
really
will essentially mean that the EU can continue with business as usual, and corporations like Chevron and Exxon are being financially rewarded for doing the wrong thing, which sends exactly the wrong message to corporations.
So once they shut off the emissions, they're not rewarded for it.
We're creating a perverse incentive to actually pollute more, because the corporations will get the message if they flagrantly violate the law, they will actually get paid for ending what is illegal.
Okay, Patrick, you want to say something?
Well, I have to say that, again, I think that Daphne's... I'm sure that if you look at the hundreds of millions of credits which have been issued through this system, you will eventually find one or two where there's been a problem. So we acknowledge the system is not perfect. But in terms of this issue of offsets, this is where NGOs such as Daphne's seem to be in exactly the same position as ExxonMobil and those polluters. the right, far right wing and the far left wing both seem to be saying that this system doesn't work, and perhaps the reality and the truth lies in the middle here, which is that the system, yes, it's not perfect, it's a brand new system which has been put in place, and a system that needs to exist for many years if it is to be effective. But again, offsets are only allowable for 12% on average of the reductions in Europe. 88% has to come through domestic action, and it is that 12% allows for a transfer of wealth and expertise to areas in the, of the world which really can benefit from it and can provide genuine carbon reduction projects at a much cheaper price than can be achieved in Europe. And don't forget that a ton of carbon pumped into the atmosphere in Africa or in South America is exactly the same as a ton of carbon pumped into the atmosphere here in Europe or there in the States. Yes.
Dr. Rome, do you agree that up to 90% is what's done domestically?
Well, I should say that, that currently in the European trading system, I think only about 2 or 3% of the emissions reductions are being achieved through offsets, because it has been cheaper to reduce emissions domestically. I coined the term rip offsets on my blog, climateprogress.org, principally for purely voluntary measures that were not verified at all. Look, the key thing is the industrialized countries needed to set up a mechanism whereby polluters could pay for poorer countries to develop cleanly. Everybody wants to do that. So you need an approach. This is the approach that they came up with. I agree that it's not perfect, and I would like to see more verification. But fundamentally, you want polluters in the rich countries to help the poorer countries use clean energy and reduce their pollution. So I think the key is to fix the mechanism and make it as verifiable as possible, rather than get rid of it entirely.
Okay, we are going to have to take a short break right now. More of our discussion in a moment. We'll be right back.
Yeah, well, you won't be right back. I can tell you that right now. But this guy will be.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, man.
First, there was ClimateGate, the scandal with hacked emails that suggest scientists have abused data for research on global warming. Now, another international climate scandal is emerging that may have an impact on the talks in Copenhagen. Europe's top police body, Europol, the closest thing that the EU has to the American FBI, has exposed a massive fraud with the Union's official market and carbon credits, the emission trading system. The fraud is costing taxpayers in a handful of European countries more than 5 billion euro. That's more than $7 billion. And it also raises doubts about the effectiveness of carbon trading as a measure to curb emissions. Europol director Rob Wainwright issued the following statement. These criminal activities endanger the credibility of the European Union emission trading system and lead to the loss of significant tax revenue for governments. Police authorities in Belgium, Denmark, France, the Netherlands, Spain and the United Kingdom have worked together in what Europol calls a process to identify and disrupt the organized criminal structures behind these fraud schemes. Let's see if I can explain the scheme using this graphic provided by Europol. The fraud is based on what tax experts and investigators call a carousel fraud with missing traders. This carousel generates money by stealing value-added tax or sales tax from the national governments. The first step of the criminals is to open a trading account with a national carbon registry in the name of a newly registered company. From there, this company buys EU emission allowances in another country on one of the 6 official carbon exchanges. After that, these emission allowances are moved to another country and subsequently sold to an unregulated broker in yet another country. This broker then charges VAT or sales tax on the transactions, and he does not pay the collected VAT to the tax authorities. And just before they realize that this company owes them huge amounts of VAT, basically a period of a few months, the company and its owners disappear. A new company then is set up, using other frontmen, to repeat the carousel. The crime rings that run such schemes can have several dozen or hundreds of companies whose real owners are difficult to trace. Basically, this type of fraud is possible because European countries continue to disagree on single market tax legislation. Carousel fraud, therefore, is a constant feature in the European cross-border market. Until recently, though, it only happened mostly with shipments of valuable goods, such as iPods or flat-panel TVs, not with carbon credits. The emission trading system in Europe was set up in 2005 as part of the European Union's efforts to curb emissions of greenhouse gases. This topic now is at the top of the agenda at the UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen this week and next. This unprecedented and massive fraud is likely to prove a major embarrassment for EU negotiators. Raymond Franken, EUX TV.
Yeah.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
So the question is, you know, what is this terrible CO2 that everybody keeps talking about? What's all this carbon emissions and all that? What is this? What uses do CO2 have? Let's take a peek at this real quick. Uses
see this
carbon
video
dioxide.
Carefully. Here, the firefighter is using a red jar filled with a gas in order to extinguish the fire. See? So what kind of gas is present in this red jar? Well, this gas is nothing but carbon dioxide gas.
Uh-oh, that means that doggone fire department's going to have to pay some carbon tax. Just put out that fire, man. So we gotta do something about this kind of stuff. We can't have firemen going around starting global warming and stuff like that. You know, not to mention the fire itself, probably... Who knows what toxic crud is burning up in that fire. But nonetheless, he just used CO2 to put out a fire. So that could potentially be a problem. So, you know, we can't have the firemen being part of the scam, you know. So we're going to have a talk with them.
So this red jar is known as a fire extinguisher. And the gas which is present in the fire extinguishers is carbon dioxide gas. So remember from the physical property of carbon dioxide is neither combustible nor does it support combustion. This is the reason why carbon dioxide is used for putting off fire. Carbon dioxide has other uses as well. Carbon dioxide can be liquefied under very cold temperature and high pressure. Now when this liquid carbon dioxide is further cooled, a solid carbon dioxide is formed. Now, at minus 78 degrees Celsius, solid carbon dioxide is formed. This solid carbon dioxide is known as dry ice.
So
this solid mass that you see here is nothing but dry ice or solid carbon dioxide. Due to the very cold temperature, dry ice or solid carbon dioxide is used to keep foods fresh and other perishable items cold. Thus, it is used as a refrigerant.
So, we're going to have to get rid of dry ice. Not only do the hooligans mix dry ice inside of a soda bottle and put a little bit of soda or a little bit of water in there, and then cap it off because that causes the gases to expand until eventually the doggone... bottle can't take the pressure anymore, and kapowie, you know. So, you know, we're gonna have to knock that whole dry ice thing down. We can't be having solid carbon dioxide running around because people could get a little rowdy with it. And the fact that, you know, we can't have the makers of carbon dioxide in the frozen form actually out there producing, you know, some more stuff that could be used in the scam to steal money from people under false pretenses. So let's keep going.
Now, do you love to eat breads and puff pastries?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how they are made? Well, there is some ingredient used in baking which makes the bread and the pastries fluff up and so soft. See, during the baking process, the puff pastries rise up. They become double their size. So what is the special ingredient which is used in making these items? Well, in baking process, baking powder and baking soda is used. So is baking powder and baking soda the same thing? Well, no. Both these items are made using carbon dioxide in the laboratory. Baking soda contains sodium bicarbonate and baking powder contains sodium bicarbonate along with potassium hydrogen tartrate. So baking powder, you see, contains a base that is sodium bicarbonate and it contains an acid that is potassium hydrogen tartrate. So for ideal baking purpose, baking powder is used.
So, we're going to have to like start eating flat bread or rice cakes because we can't be using baking soda and, you know, that kind of stuff inside a baking powder or whatever inside the doggone bread to make it all fluffy and everything. So, we're going to have to basically start eating crackers or something that don't have to fluff up or anything like that. So, anyway, let's just keep on rolling. So, let's see. No firefighters using CO2, no dry ice for refrigerant, and no baking soda for the doggone baking industry. So they're going to have to come around some other way. Maybe they could just pump it full of air or something like that and hope it don't explode.
Because in baking powder, the base and the acid react to give out carbon dioxide gas. It is this carbon dioxide gas which is evolved from the dough, and this makes the puff pastries, cakes and breads so soft and sponge-like.
Not anymore.
Now another very common item used in our daily life, the detergent, used to wash our clothes. Now do you know that detergent is also made using carbon dioxide gas?
What?
Well, detergent like washing soda and washing powder is made using carbon dioxide gas. Well, in the laboratory, washing soda is made and it is chemically known as sodium carbonate. Similarly, washing powder contains washing soda, that is sodium carbonate, and along with that, powdered soap and other chemical is mixed in order to prepare washing powder.
Really?
So in the laboratory, how is washing soda made? Well, the process is known as Solvay's process. By Solvay's process, carbon dioxide is reacted with two chemicals, one sodium chloride and another ammonia. So carbon dioxide reacts with sodium chloride and ammonia in the presence of water to form washing soda, which is chemically known as sodium carbonate. This washing soda is very helpful for softening hard water and this helps us in washing of clothes. But if you have very dirty clothes which are difficult to wash with only washing soda, in that case washing powder is used which contains powdered soap and other chemicals.
Hold on there, man. So now it's like even in the laundry soap as well. So that kind of makes the water a little softer, so I guess makes your clothes a lot better or something like that, you know? So maybe we just need to change that and just start beating our clothes on the rocks in the creek or something like that. That would save a little bit more CO2. Hold on, we got to hear from this guy again.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
Even, really?
Yeah, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad.
Yeah.
Because I'm capping greenhouse gases.
Yeah,
coal
cap
power
them,
plants,
man.
You know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations.
Oh yeah.
That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, I'm hip. I got you, bro.
Now, whenever you open up the bottle of a soda can, why do you see fizz coming out? Well, the fizz is nothing but carbon dioxide gas. Because in the soda water or cola water, carbon dioxide is mixed with water under very high pressure.
Okay, so now, look, you know, even in the soda industry, you know, we got an issue because do you realize how many people drink sodas? How many people drinking Coke and Pepsi and Sprite and all these different 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and all their favorite, you know, orange drinks and grape drinks that are carbonated, not to mention in the beer industry and the champagne, all that kind of stuff. Well, every time somebody pops the top, they're causing global warming, man. They're causing climate change. They're causing climate disruption. So we're going to have to start drinking flat soft drinks and flat hard drinks as well. So let's keep rolling. Let's see what this lady got to say here.
Whenever you open up the lid, the pressure is released out and you get fizz in the form of carbon dioxide.
Yeah, fizzy drinks.
So carbon dioxide is used in aerated drinks.
Yeah.
Now, not only in the laboratory for preparing many chemical items, but carbon dioxide is also used in nature. Green plants and trees require carbon dioxide in order to survive. What they do, they take up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere along with water, sunlight and a very special pigment present in the green plants. They prepare their food, which is known as carbohydrate, and also they release oxygen. So this entire process of absorbing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and preparing food is known as photosynthesis.
Oh no, we can't have this photosynthesis, you know, messing with carbon either, you know. That's going to add to the tax. Oh, it's just like a no-win situation. Hold on, let's hear what this guy has to say real quick.
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even... Yeah, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
You think that man is drinking flat soda or flat champagne or something like that? You think he's like eating flat bread or... Maybe, you know, what was that other one? Basically using hard water to wash his clothes and stuff like that. Yeah, that had to do with soap. Just curious.
So, green plants utilize CO2 to carry out photosynthesis. So, carbon dioxide is absorbed from the atmosphere by green plants and oxygen is released into the atmosphere. It is this oxygen which helps in the respiration of all living beings.
Oh, really?
The carbon dioxide requirement of green plants can also be replenished by using fertilizers. Fertilizers are chemical compounds which, when sprayed onto plants, replenish their nutrient requirement. So,
now hold on. So we got fertilizers using carbon dioxide too? We can't be doing that. Can't be fertilizing. Can't be throwing cow dung and all that different type of natural fertilizer down and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to have to do a lot of work here. We're going to have to rake up some leaves and some grass clippings and bury them under the ground because we can't have, you know, this methane or CO2 or anything like that coming out. We got to do something about all this stuff. So you can't be throwing fertilizer down. Let's see. Let's keep on going here.
Carbon dioxide is used to prepare fertilizers. And this, one of the example of carbon dioxide used in making fertilizer is urea. So this urea, when sprayed onto plants, release carbon dioxide and help them use it to make their food.
Oh, well, hold on there. So it's like, so when you're throwing the fertilizer down, it's releasing carbon dioxide, feeding the plants, and at the same time releasing oxygen when the plants eat the carbon dioxide. So, sort of sounds like a good thing, but nonetheless, we're still going to get taxed for it. Man, hold on. This guy wants to say something.
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even... you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. Mm. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, that's logical. All right, let's keep going here.
You know that carbon dioxide is an excretory gas? That is, when we exhale out, we are exhaling air that is rich in carbon dioxide. But in critical condition in the hospital, carbon dioxide is also used for artificial respiration.
What?
How is that possible? Well, carbon dioxide is mixed with oxygen in a very specific proportion, which is known as carbogen. So this carbogen contains 70% of oxygen and 30% carbon dioxide. In this proportion, when given to very critical patients having respiratory problems, they can survive, and this is known as artificial respiration.
What? So you're using CO2 to keep people alive in the hospital when they're in critical condition? Hold on a second. That don't sound right. It doesn't jive with what this guy's talking about.
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations.
Yeah.
That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Well, that makes sense. That's kind of logical, except for the fact that they're using carbon dioxide to keep critical patients alive. Artificial respiration or something like that. Huh. Imagine that.
So carbon dioxide is a very important gas for all of us. Carbon dioxide is used in the laboratory or in the industry to prepare many chemical items. So, carbon dioxide is used in fire extinguishers to put off fire. It is also used to manufacture dry ice, which is used as a refrigerant to keep the foods and perishable items fresh. Now, carbon dioxide is very important in baking industry because carbon dioxide is used for making baking powder and baking soda.
Oh.
Similarly, carbon dioxide is also used for making washing powder and washing soda, which are very important in washing clothes in the laundry.
I didn't know that.
Also, carbon dioxide is used in aerated drinks, and carbon dioxide is released in the form of fizz whenever you open up the bottle of an aerated drink.
Yeah, that explains it. If you shake it up, it
goes. Now, carbon dioxide is also used for making fertilizers. Fertilizers give better yield of plant. And also, carbon dioxide is used to manufacture a very important item called carbogen, which is used for artificial respiration.
Yeah, so like you keep that critical patient alive.
Now, carbon dioxide in its natural form in the atmosphere is used by plants to prepare their food by a process called photosynthesis.
Yeah, photosynthesis. Ah, imagine that. Hold on a second. Just something just ain't jiving here.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations.
Yeah.
That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like a scam to me. What about you? Sound like a scam to you? All right, let's keep rolling.
For millions of years, the Earth has been perfectly good at absorbing carbon dioxide. Our forests, seas, and streams suck the gas.
What? Hold on, we gotta rewind that. I can't believe that guy just said that. Hold on, listen, what did you just say?
For millions of years, the Earth has been perfectly good at absorbing carbon dioxide. Our forests, seas, and streams suck the gas up, acting as natural.
Hold on.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
But what about
regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to.
But didn't you hear what
retrofit their operations?
Didn't you hear what
that will cost money?
They
will pass that money on to consumers.
And going to pass it on to the consumer. But listen to this, Mr. Obama. Listen closely here. Listen what they just said.
For millions of years, the Earth has been perfectly good at absorbing carbon dioxide. Our forests, seas, and streams suck the gas up, acting as natural carbon sinks. That was until humans came along and tipped the scales.
If we continue to burn fossil fuels at ever-rising rates, we could warm the planet by 7 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. And the impacts of...
What? Now why is it so cold outside? Dang humans. That's why the guy's trying to cap it, because he's just trying to keep us warm, man.
That would be catastrophic.
There have been various attempts to capture this harmful CO2, but they've all come with significant compromise.
Hold on a second here. I thought you was on the CO2 because the planet was doing a good job for millions of years, but now it's harmful? It didn't seem harmful when they was keeping that critical person alive, using that CO2 and oxygen mix so that they could do artificial respiration. Or the plants, I mean, they seem to be getting some food out of the deal and giving back some oxygen, plus the bread and the sodas, sodies for those of you. Yeah. And, the fizzy drink beers and champagnes and, the soap and there's a lot of it. The fireman. It's like, that's a terrible thing, that gas. We just got to keep on rolling here. We're gonna figure this out.
Now.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Blast off.
Igniter on.
Laser on.
Hold. Hey, man. Lamp on. Understand, lamp off.
It works.
The reason this team is so happy is because they've just completed the first successful ignition of the first CO2-powered turbine in the world's first carbon-neutral natural gas power plant. Their company is called Net Power.
It'll be the first truly zero-emission power plant in the world.
In a traditional gas power plant, the burning gas creates steam, which turns a power-generating turbine, creating a lot of excess CO2 in the process. Previous attempts to capture that CO2 have reduced efficiency and led to higher costs of production.
Generally, it was thought that carbon capture on natural gas was not economic. So what we had to do was start with a blank sheet of paper.
Okay.
Enter this man, Rodney Allum. He developed the system now referred to as the Allum cycle.
I set myself the objective of devising something which would remove 100% of the CO2 from the fossil fuel with no increase in the cost of electricity.
Rodney actually did most of his work on what's called quadrille paper. He has a 0.5 millimeter mechanical pencil and a four-function calculator and book tables to look up his data.
When a complex computer model was created to check Rodney's calculations,
Rodney's pretty much right.
I selected CO2 as the fluid in the turbine rather than the steam or air, which we used previously in steam systems or gas turbine systems. And it worked.
Okay, so that kind of makes sense.
We, in effect, turned the problem into the solution.
In Rodney's design, since the CO2 is used to spin the turbine and is part of an entirely closed loop, it never enters the atmosphere.
All right, let's pause here for a second and think about this. Think this thing through here, because, they use CO2 as a propellant in BB guns and stuff like that, and they use CO2 as propellants for other different applications as well. So but they're not putting any, they're putting zero into the atmosphere. That's, you know, that's a good thing, because this guy right here, you know,
under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations.
Yeah, I feel you, brother.
Pass that money on to consumers.
I feel you. Don't pass it on to the consumer, though. I don't think the consumer is going to be too awful happy about that. And, you know, that critical patient might not be so happy about it, because once we get rid of this terrible CO2 thing, you know, no more taxes, though. Well, so we're going to have to keep that around. And, you know, that whole fossil fuel industry thing, we're going to have to have a talk with those folks, because, you know, hey, you can't be having people do that stuff. Now, let's just keep on rolling here, because this is getting interesting.
Captured by default.
All right, Dwight, I understand you want a...
And because the CO2 power system is just as efficient as traditional natural gas plants, the cost per kilowatt hour is the same.
We've designed a power cycle that is cheaper and cleaner rather than more costly. Imagine when you have economics driving a solution instead of policy aspirations.
Although the CO2 never enters the atmosphere, the alum cycle still generates a carbon byproduct.
Oh,
which leaves
hold
us
on.
With the problem.
Hold on. What? Hold. What do you say? Carbon byproduct? Well, we're trying to get rid of the nasty. We're not trying to make more nasty. Okay, we're back to this guy again.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever
this
the industry was, they would have to.
Guys are making a byproduct of carbon, so you're going to charge them a little more.
Money on to consumers.
Is that going to hit the consumer too? Because they're making a byproduct. Okay, let's keep going.
Of what to do with all that carbon.
Yeah, what are we going to do with all that carbon, man?
4,000 miles away, engineers in Iceland have an interesting take on how to keep the captured CO2 out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Shoving it directly into the ground.
What? Shoving it in the ground? Hold on.
Carfax.
Hold on a second. You're going to be shoving it, that garbage down in the ground? Oh, wait a second. They already do that with fracking, man. Yeah, because they shove that down in the ground in order to crack out to get more so-called fossil fuels and natural gas. Yeah, they use that pressure from that CO2 to... Okay. Boy, I hate to do it, but...
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
Well, yeah, because they're going to shove this in the ground,
too. Regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants...
Well, you can cap them, but they're shoving it in the ground.
Whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to...
You're going to charge them more?
Retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
All right, it's the consumer again. Doggone consumer getting screwed, man.
It's an R&D project that we started about 12 years ago with the objective of developing methods and technologies for capturing otherwise emitted CO2, injecting it into basaltic formations. We know that certain chemical processes are already happening in nature. For example, in vicinity of volcanoes, the CO2 dissolves into groundwater and forms new types of rock by interacting with basalt. And we...
What? Wait a second. You're saying that doggone CO2 is reacting with the basalt and it's making more rocks? Doggone it, we're going to have rocks everywhere. This is crazy. It's going to make more rocks, so you're going to shove it under the ground. It's going to react with the basalt, and it's going to make more rocks. This doggone CO2 is getting out of hand here, man. Doggone it.
We thought, why not try and accelerate this process at an industrial scale?
Oh yeah, let's accelerate.
Very simply, CarbFix takes the captured carbon and mixes it with water, which basically creates seltzer. They then take the fizzy liquid and inject it deep into the earth.
What? They're spraying soda water down in the doggone earth? Man, let's keep going.
Where the carbon chemically bonds to the basalt rock.
Instead of CO2 turning into rock in hundreds to thousands of years, this would happen within the time frame of a few years.
Wow.
Here we have an example of a vein. This is then a small fracture where we would have dissolved part of the basalt, and then we fill it up again with the carbonates, and that's where we see these pores filling up with calcites.
I see.
If I'm
to understand this, when the fracking industry uses this to actually crack up the ground, if there's any basalt underneath there, then this chemistry would actually make more rock and, I guess, make the doggone ground a little more stable again. But that's only, after the initial earthquake that's occurred by, or even potential sinkhole by taking all the hydraulics out from underneath, hydraulic pressure out from underneath the ground that your house is on. But it's all right if your house survives and doesn't go in a sinkhole, then it'll have, new rock under there within a couple of years. Okay, I think we can work with that.
All basalt available on Earth, theoretically, we could use it to permanently store much more than all CO2 that we would emit from burning all fossil fuel available globally.
But CarbFix is still operating at a...
Hold on a second. So, going to store it permanently under the ground. What happens when all the CO2 is permanently stored under the ground? Well, I guess that's not even possible because you still got fermentation, you got people exhaling all the time, and you got all these people that are actually still burning fossil fuels because they got carbon credits and they can make a little bit more so that, it kind of makes the prices go up a little bit or a lot. Or hold on a second.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Listen, I'm just trying to make sense of all this. Pass it on to the consumers. I get that, buried in the ground, that's kind of odd. how to get rid of it altogether, that's strange. And then the planet heating up because of, it's cold outside. I don't understand that portion yet. What I do understand is everybody and his brother's getting ripped off by the system because there's CO2 something that you just can't get rid of unless you don't want to bake with it, you don't want to wash your clothes with it, you don't want to have any fizzy drinks with it, you don't want anybody to utilize it for artificial respiration. You don't want to use it for, fracking purposes to get more the so-called fossil fuels out of the ground, natural gases or anything like that. Or what was that first one out there? Oh, you don't want dry ice for refrigerant. And you sure as heck don't want the firefighter running around with red canisters spraying out fires with CO2. we got to get rid of this stuff. Man, I'm getting a headache.
Small scale. And it would take serious interest from industries and governments to grow to a size that would affect climate change worldwide.
Oh, wow.
In the meantime, Net Power won't be burying its CO2 under the ground. Oh. They'll be selling it for cold, hard cash.
What? Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a second. Are you serious? Oh, you got to hear this again, because I don't even think I heard it right the first time. Let's try this again.
In the meantime, Net Power won't be burying its CO2 under the ground. They'll be selling it for cold, hard cash.
What? Are you serious? But wait a second.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Mr. Obama, I don't think you're paying attention here. I don't think you are listening to what this man just said.
It's to grow to a size that would affect climate change worldwide. In the meantime, Net Power won't be burying its CO2 under the ground. They'll be selling it for cold, hard cash.
Cold,
because for the first time, we capture carbon dioxide at very inexpensive prices. We open up whole new industries for reuses and recycling CO2 that can be useful in building materials, chemicals, plastics, and a myriad of other applications.
But one of the most common uses of industrial CO2 is actually extracting fossil fuels from the ground.
In the U.S., you're actually injecting over 20 million tons a year of CO2 for enhanced oil recovery at the moment.
You don't see it as undercutting the mission of reducing CO2?
No, I think if you do, if you're sensible about the way that hydrocarbons are used, and you have an integrated idea as to how you're going to utilize that hydrocarbon in a clean way.
And that part is key. If Net Power's excess CO2 essentially leads to more oil being extracted, it's not a stretch to imagine it will mostly be used in traditional carbon-spewing plants, not clean ones like Net Power.
That's gotta be a joke.
It very much appears that, you know, the age of fossil fuels is likely coming to a close.
Hold on a second. It's like, this guy, did he just say that?
Power.
It very much appears that, you know, the age of fossil fuels is likely coming to a close. Some of these technologies for capturing and sequestering carbon might help provide sort of that bridge. It's going to take a decade or two to really make that transition in our global energy economy.
I'm very optimistic. All the technology's there, and we just need the will. And that's really happening now.
If we really want to succeed in fighting climate change, then we need to bring down the CO2 levels in the atmosphere.
Look, you just said you're going to sell it for cold cash. And they're going to pull up more fossil fuels. And then you also said that they're probably not going to put it in the same type of plant you're talking about. They're going to shove it over there in one of the other pollutant ones. And so sounds like a vicious circle to me. I think the people of the world are being scammed. You're getting ripped off, people. This is mind-blowing.
No silver bullet. There is no one solution. We have to use all the methods available.
Wow. I mean, how many times or how loud can you say, wow? Yeah, we're going to rip everybody off. We're going to take and we're going to capture it and then sell it for cold, hard cash to the fossil fuel industry that's going to use it to crack up the ground and pull out more fossil fuels, a.k.a. natural gas or oil or whatever. But under his plan...
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
Yeah.
Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases. Coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations.
I see.
That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
I see. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw. So, hold on a second. Why, you know, one on one hand, it's a terrible tragedy that this nasty CO2 is actually getting out there, but on the other hand, all the uses, I'm getting confused here.
So, you want to invest your money in green energy. Doesn't that just sound like the right thing to do? I'm going to save the planet. I'm going to invest in the future, in hydrogen. I'm going to give all my money to a con man.
What?
We issued an investor alert about oil and gas and alternative energy scams this summer.
Missouri securities regulator Matt Kitsey says the rush to invest in so-called green energy alternatives has created an ocean of opportunity. And that means you know who will be showing up.
Well, there's no question that scam artists and people who are looking to turn a quick buck will prey on and take advantage of the fears of the general public.
In Idaho, a company known as Genesis World Energy claimed to have invented a breakthrough fuel cell that could power a household for 20 years using only a single bathtub full of water.
Okay.
Investors lined up for the chance to write checks to founder Pat Kelly, who was later charged with three felonies. His so-called Edison device turned out to be awfully similar to a hobby kit sold by Hamaka Schlemmer. Around the country, dozens of miracle energy schemes have popped up, most claiming to have some sort of hydrogen breakthrough. But real scientists know it's just not that easy.
Yeah, you'll real scientists.
Many people advertise that they have come up with the solution.
George Sverdrup oversees hydrogen research at the nation's top alternative energy lab in Colorado. And he says our transition to a bathtub-powered economy is sadly not imminent.
Because we are evaluating all of the different options to move to hydrogen, and we know what the technical challenges are for each one of them.
But if parting a hydrogen atom from an oxygen atom remains difficult, parting a fool from his money is still surprisingly easy in Missouri.
Difficult. Stan Myers was doing it back in 79. Radio technology and special injectors, so how could it be difficult? Oh well, let's keep going.
Missouri, investors poured $100,000 into a startup company that claimed to be on the verge of producing a car that could run on tap water.
A car that could run on tap water? That sounds impossible. Nonetheless, Stan Myers did it. Let's keep going.
Seriously, tap water?
Yeah, because it's hydrogen and oxygen.
Because Matt Kitsey's folks were able to shut the company down and get all the investors their money back. But
yeah,
some of them didn't want to be rescued. They truly believed in the aqua car. And Kitsey says their angry reaction wasn't all that unusual.
And what's probably at the root of that is that the folks that are perpetrating these scams or promoting these investment opportunities, as they've probably stated, are good salespeople. Anybody can call our investor protection hotline and make sure that the security and that the investment is actually registered with our office.
Uh-huh. Okay, so like you can't run nothing on tap water. It's a scam, I guess. Poor Stan Myers didn't know that when he was driving around in his dune buggy. But nonetheless...
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket.
You think those two could possibly be related to each
other? Regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to.
Oh wait, yeah, it does.
That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Because they said that water was the best greenhouse gas. Water vapor being the best greenhouse gas. So if you have all these hydrogen cars, you're going to have more greenhouse gases. We just can't win for losing.
If you live in a state with regulated utilities, you get an electric bill every month from your utility that tells you how much electricity you used and how much it cost. You're like most Americans. You simply accept the bill as an unchanging part of your monthly expenses and either have it paid automatically or quickly write a check. The only time you really think twice is if the bill is unusually high. But even then, consumers rationalize it as a really hot month that needed a lot of air conditioning or the brand new big screen TV you just installed. But have you ever taken the time to think about exactly where that electricity bill comes from? Who decides how much a unit of energy costs? How do you know your utility is doing everything they can to keep costs down and service high? What if another company could provide your electricity more cheaply? Regulated utilities act as monopolies, meaning that they can operate without competition as long as they follow rules designed to protect consumers. States with regulated utilities have a Public Utilities Commission, PUC, typically 3 to 5 energy experts who make and enforce the utility rules. The most important of the rules that they make, and the one that determines how much electricity costs, is called the rate tariff. To determine the rate tariff, the PUC looks at how much it costs the utility to supply their customers with electricity. These costs include the rate base, fixed infrastructure costs, like power plants, transmission lines, and equipment, as well as operating costs, like fuel for the plants and employees. The PUC takes the fixed infrastructure assets, multiplies it by an allowed return rate, and then adds the expenses to determine how much money the utility is allowed to make, and therefore how much it can charge per unit of electricity. The result is a system that actually encourages utilities to spend more and be inefficient. Regulated utilities are guaranteed to have their expenses covered, and the more fixed infrastructure they build, the higher the allowed return they can generate. Members of the PUC are often deeply intertwined in state politics and subject to intense lobbying, and they can have dubious results. For example, the Alabama PUC allows Alabama Power Co. to have a 51% higher allowed return on the rate base than what the Connecticut PUC allows United Illuminating Co. Additionally, unless the PUC enacts specific rules limiting the amount of pollution a utility is allowed, there is no incentive for a utility to avoid highly carbon-intensive fuels. Aside from calling their state legislators and the PUC and advocating for change, consumers have no way to fight back. The utility's monopoly prevents them from switching to another electric provider and allowing competition to bring prices down. One of the biggest ways consumers in regulated utility territories can fight back against utilities that abuse their monopoly is by taking advantage of solar rules enacted by the PUC. The most important of these solar rules is net metering, which allows for homeowners to install solar on their homes. Net metering customers can spin their meter forwards when they consume power, backwards when they generate power from solar, and pay the utility based on their net usage. This protects customers from rising prices due to utility inefficiency, unfair PUC rulings, and carbon-intensive fuel mixes. If you want to learn more about how switching to solar with PowerScout can protect you from the control of monopolistic utilities, visit www.powerscout.com for a free solar analysis and to talk with one of our solar experts. PowerScout.com.
PowerScout.com. I'm going to have to check that out, man. So, where do we go from here, man? Well, I guess we're going to have to listen to this right here because they use a lot of fear-mongering. All right, not only do this is what this guy said right here, it has to got to be some sort of fear-mongering because he's talking about, you know, I'll just let him say it.
Under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah, so that poor family that can barely get by is going to have to pay higher electric bills, so they're going to have to decide whether to stay hotter in the summer than normal or stay colder in the winter than normal. Just turn the thermostat down. That's what the power company always tells you. Oh, just turn your thermostat down. You'll save money. Oh, really? But do you realize it's like freezing outside? And if it's below zero, it's like dangerously freezing outside. That could, you know, maybe cause me to die or something like that. So I could turn my thermostat down just like, no. See, there's, this is nuts, man. And they attack people like myself that talk about real alternative energy solutions, and they attack anything to do with hydrogen technology because they say it just can't work. And mainstream scientists, there are no mainstream scientists, there are no real scientists anymore. That's why mad science actually exists. So you're going to scare people into higher bills, and you're going to force them into higher bills. You're going to use a carbon scam to rip them off, and you're going to make them thank you for it. Oh, thank you, sir. I'm going to have some more because you didn't save my planet. Yeah, right. It saved nothing. You're going to pump the crud into the ground, store it in the ground, hock it for real cash, hard, cold cash, and you're going to keep on recycling and redoing and basically pulling more so-called fossil fuels out of the ground and just continuous cycle. And it doesn't matter if this place over there, it pollutes a lot, you know, releases a lot of CO2 because this one over here has bought the carbon credits. And so you're not doing anything other than ripping the people off, stealing money from them, literally stealing money, by telling them that you're going to save the planet from climate change or global warming or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be according to whatever the weather is, when the math doesn't add up. Now you wonder why mad science is mad science? That's why. Because it really angers me to know that this system is literally stealing from the people. And the fact that there are people out there who believe it so much, they religiously preach that climate change and climate disruption and global warming is a real thing and it's man-made, and even the apologists that say, well, even if it ain't, we could still get better and all this and that, they are feeding the same corrupt system. They are feeding the criminal enterprise that is quite literally stealing money from your mama. And you just keep on doing the same doggone thing. You just keep on supporting the system. You keep on spreading the lies and propaganda, sitting there trying to talk about how climate change is real, how global warming is real. And let's not get into mincing words. When somebody says climate change, it's hard to deny that the climate changes, because the climate changes at the drop of a hat. One minute it's warm outside, the next minute it's cold outside, one minute it's dry and sunny outside, the next minute it's pouring down raining, depending on where you live on this so-called rock we're living on. But that don't matter. It don't matter, because under his plan, your bill's going to skyrocket. And they're going to pass that money on to you. You're going to pay for it. And then you're going to turn around and spread their propaganda into my face and try to tell me that, oh, it's real, it's real. The scientists, all the scientists say. No, all the scientists don't say. And the debate hasn't even begun. The science isn't settled. It's a lie, and it's a lie that is stealing billions and billions of dollars while still repeating the same cycle of pulling the so-called fossil fuels, which, by the way, there is absolutely no such thing as fossil fuels. Nothing. No way. Zero, zilch, nada. It's another lie. But you bought into the lie. Because the dinosaurs made the oil that's in your car that's now polluting the planet, regardless of the fact that nature has for billions of years, according to science, been using this CO2 to feed the plants in order for the plants to turn around and give you fresh oxygen to breathe. Never mind the physics, CO2 can magically go where oxygen cannot. Even though CO2 is a heavier molecule and displaces oxygen, even carbon monoxide is a heavier molecule than oxygen, and it also displaces oxygen. So you would suffocate with one, and you would suffocate and poison with the other. So if there was enough from the tailpipe of your car to the Earth's atmosphere, upper atmosphere, then you'd already be dead. but you're too dumb to realize that basic science even exists because they intentionally made you stupid in the government indoctrination centers that they call the public school system. That's why mad science exists. And now? And now? Yeah, now. Why do we got to get rid of CO2? I don't know. Let's hear about this kind of thing. Future free power energy.
Seat. A ship carrying gas explodes in Boston Harbor. A Chinese dam collapses, unleashing a 50-foot tidal wave. The East Coast is plunged into days of darkness by a blackout. And in London, a train carrying nuclear waste crashes, enveloping the city in a radioactive cloud. These nightmare scenarios could happen because we have become addicted to energy. And like any addict, we don't care how we get our fix. But now the consequences could lead to global disasters. Satisfying our energy needs has reached crisis point. The race is on to plug the gap between diminishing supply and growing demand. Especially for supply that is clean, green, and cheap.
What will happen to the world 100 years from today is actually fundamentally quite frightening. Many people don't appreciate just how frightening it is. So we need a new industrial revolution.
America's Secretary of State for Energy, Professor Stephen Chu, is a Nobel Prize-winning physicist. He deals in science fact.
We had incredible energy resources, and so we built an infrastructure and a set of habits based on abundant energy for 200 years.
Rapid global industrialization has helped create global prosperity. But it also has addicted the world to fossil fuels, now poisoning and warming our planet. In the next 20 years, we'll need 60% more power to satisfy the new, emerging global economies. But what will be the source of that new power? Fossil fuels? Nuclear? Hydroelectric? Each has advantages and risks.
Our generation's response to this challenge will be judged by history. For if we fail to meet it boldly, swiftly, and together, we risk consigning future generations to an irreversible catastrophe.
An irreversible catastrophe. Same guy who said this.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yeah. Are you angry, Shaziz? Well, yeah, you darn tootin' I'm angry. I'm angry because of liars like that one you just heard right there, which the only truth he said was that you were going to get screwed. You're going to have to pay higher bills. But the reality of the whole situation, if you understand physics and science, real science, not the trash that these people claim to be scientists just because they got a white coat on. You could be crazy and have a white coat on. But these doggone people are looked up like gods, and they get to tell everybody of all the dangers, and we're all going to die, and the dams are going to break, and the power's going to go out, and the only way that we can solve this is charging you extra money on your utility bills when you can't afford it. Never mind, you might need some medicine, or you might need some doggone heat or some cooling, depending on where you're at, what your climate is. It doesn't matter whether it's cold outside or 20 inches of snow on the ground. You still got to pay carbon tax. You're breathing it out. You're releasing it with your soda, your doggone laundry detergent. And if you're using dry ice to keep your food cool so it don't spoil. And that all the rest of the uses for it. And you know, if you're on... you know, some sort of life support because you're critical and they're using a mixture of that, well, you can't have that as well. Don't forget the firefighters spraying the crud everywhere. You know, so, hey, this is a big joke, right? It's got to be a joke because nobody could be this stupid. Nobody could be this incredibly ignorant to the truth of the facts unless they had been lied to and indoctrinated and basically hypnotized in believing that lie so much that they're willing to go out there and argue with their brothers and sisters in the world about how climate change is real, global warming is real, climate disruption is real. All the scientists agree. No, all the scientists don't agree. There are no real scientists, and fossil fuel is a lie. There is no such thing as fossil fuel. Leaves, grass clippings, dead animals, everything, including you, is recycled into the system. They even said that it's been going on for billions of years, according to science. The Earth has been doing this chemistry thing. You pull it out of the ground, you use it up, it gets recycled back into the doggone system, and if the world hasn't come to a catastrophic end within billions of years, even after all the volcanoes erupting and all the crud that was going on in the atmosphere when that occurred, well then it ain't happening. But they use lies, fear, and propaganda and just all in all out deceit with the criminal enterprise that is the governments of this doggone world that just can't seem to get their act together. But you got to get your act together. You got to pay your bills. You got to pay your carbon tax. You got to pay all your taxes. You got to be a good little servant to the man. And it doesn't matter if you get sick because you can go to the medical industry who wants to screw you over as well. I don't know when what it's going to take for the average Joe to finally realize that you're being ripped off in so many doggone different directions. And until you decide to come together and use real science and real physics and real mechanics and real truth in order to get things accomplished for one another, then this system is going to constantly have the criminal enterprises intertwined with everything that it is that you're going to have to pay for. Higher food prices, higher medical prices, higher everything. Every single thing you do is carbon related, including your body itself is carbon related. We live in a carbon-based world. But now, for some reason, carbon is a pollutant and listed as so. And so, oh, we got to send it, we got to capture it. Well, then you turn around and capture it with a zero emissions plant, and then you turn around and sell the byproduct, which is carbon, to the oil industry for cold cash. Now, you're going to tell me that this is ever going to get any better? You're being ripped off. You're being stolen from. And how many people's even going to hear this message and take it to heart? And if they do, what are they going to do about it? Nothing. Because that's what we do best. Nothing. We the people do absolutely nothing when we get ripped off. When the emperor is wearing no clothes, we tell the emperor how beautiful the emperor's new clothes are. But one little kid comes out and says, the emperor is naked, and the rest of you turn on that little kid. Why would you say such a terrible thing? Well, you look at the alternative energy people out there. How many of them are still with us? How many of them are getting ridiculously fed up and walking away from the deal? How many of them's out there being so-called debunked by the same scientist that once told you that hydrogen and oxygen made up the water molecule? So, put your water in the microwave, use the microwave to rapidly shake the molecules up and heat your water, But that's as far as it goes. Stan Myers was busting water apart and driving around in a dune buggy in the 70s. He mysteriously died. What? So, how long are you the people out there going to tolerate the ridiculousness and the lies? I would think that the majority of you are a whole lot smarter than you give yourselves credit for, and that if you ever really did sit down and check out the facts, you might find out the facts are that these people are taking something that's been in the world naturally since the dawn of time and turned it into a supposed problem and a toxic byproduct that is causing your world to heat up, regardless of the fact that you're getting snot sickles because it's colder than crud outside. And they're going to sell you a coat and mittens and gloves and a ski mask. They're going to sell you snow boots while preaching that the climate is changing and it's getting hotter outside. Really? Seriously, really? How many of you people out there are really buying into the scam after what you heard here today? Now, mad science is not going away. They can do all the dirty deeds that they want, but it's not going away. Until as long as there's breath in my body, I'm going to keep on pointing out the lie. I'm going to keep on pointing out the propaganda and the flat-out criminal theft by the so-called representation of this world. And the companies out there, they know it. The power industry, they know it. The power industry is making money off of it, for Pete's sake. They're the ones that were supposedly getting charged and punished for too much crud going into the air. But no, wait a second. They can get carbon credits. And they can trade carbon credits. So you're buying, selling, and trading something that nature produces and plants use for food, and you exhale? And you're making money off of it? You got to give them credit. At least these people are, their ingenuity, a way of making money, their doggone entrepreneurship is amazing because they're making money off of something nature already provided. Including water. They're going to sell you water. Go down your creek and get some water. Clean the stuff up. You get that for free. Unless a doggone factory down the doggone street decides they're going to dump poisons in it, and it got to go through a whole lot more cleaning in order to get it drinkable again, and then be able to put the minerals back in it once it's distilled. But nonetheless, where there's a will, there is a way. But we can't talk about that. And all the green people out there, all the supposed environmentalists out there, they're nothing but a bunch of ridiculous hypocrites. Standing out there with their wooden sticks and their paper signs talking about save the trees and ignoring nature altogether. Ignoring the real science. Because you can virtual signal and everybody thinks that you're a perfect person if you're an environmentalist. You're saving the planet. No, you're not. You're promoting the scam is what you're doing. Every time you tell somebody about climate change and global warming and climate disruption, and you're trying to tell them that it's true, you are promoting the scam. That's what you're doing. If you believe in climate change, if you really seriously believe it's man-made and we're doing this, you're promoting the scam. You're just as guilty as the criminals who are actually out there on demand, literally ripping people off, including your family. For prices of food, prices of medicine, prices of transportation, prices of heating and cooling and so on. If you're one of those so-called climate non-deniers, you're promoting the scam. You're ripping my family off. While at the same time ripping yourself and your family off. And you're fear-mongering the children, telling them the world's coming to an end. Well, it's been around for a long time, according to science. And Nature has done it really well for a long, 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 long time, according to science. But no, mankind's going to step in there and be big Barney, you know what? And he's going to kick nature down. He's going to take nature down. Never mind an F5 tornado or whatever tearing somebody's house completely apart, throwing their car for miles down the road. No, nature ain't tough. And it's your fault for driving your car. Ain't you ashamed of yourself?
Oil is the fossil fuel that drives the world's economy. Oil is black gold, dirty but precious. The world is hooked.
If you look back at the history of the 20th century, in some ways it is a history of oil. It's been a driver of geopolitics. It's been a driver of military policy for a lot of countries. And it has, at the same time, it has been sort of the fuel for the engine of economic growth.
The U.S. is a society built on oil. Transport, commerce, food, medicines, all inextricably linked to oil, with a huge $1 trillion infrastructure built to support it. But the world's oil reserves are fast running out. We may already have passed the peak of production.
Pause. Alright, that's another big lie that you need to know about. They say that the oil fossil fuels are fastly running out. And that, folks, is probably, you know, want by far the biggest, I don't know, whatever that props up the lie is the fact that there's scarcity and that you're going to run out of fossil fuel. You can make biodiesel in a lab in less than a couple hours or maybe even less than that. If you understand heat and pressure and chemistry, you can make crude oil. Nature's been doing it forever. Nature hasn't stopped doing what nature's doing, and there is no way you're ever, ever, ever going to see a day when the so-called fossil fuel ever runs out. It's not physically possible. The only way to stop fossil fuel from being created, or what they like to call fossil fuel, is to stop nature from doing what nature does. Heat, pressure, chemistry, all the different things, and the way that it was put there to begin with. Everything, leaves, when they rot, they produce all kinds of gases. CO2, they produce methane. It is a natural cycle that has not stopped. This Earth is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. Yeah, we can make messes. We do that all the time. Now, I don't argue that fact, but as far as every chemistry that's ever existed in this world, you have not lost anything. You burn firewood, you just change the molecular structure of it, you still have the firewood, but it's in a different form, a different chemical. It's just added back into the doggone same system that's going to recycle it and make another tree, for Pete's sake.
Our reliance on oil also makes it a potent political tool. One used in the past and most likely in the future. US government advisor and global energy security expert Paul Donjan understands the dangers.
We remain hostage to a relatively wide range of possibilities for oil to be disrupted, any of which could cause problems of world trade or even cause economic growth to come to a halt.
Disruption of supply by accidents and even terrorist attacks is now the global economy's Achilles heel. 80% of the world's oil passes in oil tankers through 6 narrow shipping channels, also known as choke points. The Bosphorus Strait in Turkey connects Russia, the world's second biggest oil exporter, with the rest of the world.
The Bosphorus is probably the most likely single point in the world that would cause an oil shockwave globally. if the Bosphorus were closed, 7% of the oil that every day goes on the open ocean and along major international pipelines would cease to be shipped.
Pause that for a second. On the last Mad Science show or so, I can't remember exactly which one it was, but I played a video or posted a video link over there in the Super chat room at ShazizRadio.com, and it basically talked about how a guy took a machine and cold pressed hemp seed oil, made hemp seed oil out of hemp seeds, pressed it, used about 3 gallons of it to run a expensive lawn mower. What the heck was the name of that brand? I still can't remember the doggone lawn mower that he ran with. Anyway, they're really expensive. He ran that thing and mowed his lawn on pure hemp seed oil, pure cold-pressed hemp seed oil. No chemicals mixed. He crushed the hemp seed, squeezed out the oil, and ran his doggone lawnmower on it. You think about that. Think about how many different types of nuts and how many different types of essential oils and all that that are out there. And that oil is oil no matter what. It's like ad nauseum. I keep on trying to shout it out. You can make biodiesels out of everything. You can make fuel out of recycled plastic. It's all petroleum based. And so you're never going to see a day when you never run out of what they like to call fossil fuel, crude oil or whatever. But nonetheless, let's just keep on going.
Disruption of oil supply could throw the world into turmoil. Turkey, 2015. A tanker loaded with 150,000 tons of Russian crude oil navigates through the Bosphorus, which is, at its narrowest point, just 2,200 feet wide. Iran, Russia's main oil export competitor, is suspicious of Russia's links with the West and oil deals in the Caspian Sea. A terrorist group with Iranian sympathies plows a suicide boat loaded with explosives into the Russian tanker. The sunken tanker blocks the Bosphorus to all traffic. Oil markets react instantly to the news.
As soon as the Bosphorus is closed, phones will start ringing in trading floors around the world, and oil prices will rise immediately.
But there's worse news. Africa's biggest oil producer, Nigeria, is in turmoil after election results are contested.
Oil has been systematically disrupted in Nigeria for political gain for the entirety of the last decade. The disruption in the Bosphorus would provide a great opportunity for them to amplify the impact of their disruptions.
Nigerian militants capitalize on the Bosphorus oil market collapse by disrupting the oil wells. Another 5% of the global supply is lost. With 12% of oil supplies disrupted, prices spiral out of control.
I got to pause for a second because I found the name of that is Kubota. It's a really expensive but really cool tractor that you can get all kinds of implements for and that kind of stuff. But this guy had just a regular Kubota lawn tractor, and he ran it on pure hemp seed oil. And so, with that said, you know, that's probably another reason why hemp is so, you know, demonized and basically illegal in most places, with exception, you know, here and there. But either way, it's competition for the oil industry, and they know that. And so that's why they work as hard as they can to lobby against anything that would maybe even legalize, you know, industrial hemp. So, hey, whatever.
After just 3 days, motorists begin panic buying petrol. People are forced to seek other means of transport. As oil prices increase, truckers protest, blockading roads. But the price keeps rising.
We could be well above $130, $140 by the end of it. And those are the kinds of prices that triggered the last recession.
It takes 4 weeks to reopen the Bosphorus. It's already too late. The world plunges into global recession.
Is the United States prepared to deal with another oil shock? The answer is no. Is the world economy prepared to deal with another oil shock? The answer is no.
Until we can develop alternative fuels for transportation, the world remains at the mercy of the oil markets.
Pause. Until we can develop alternative fuels. Has anybody not been listening to me for the last doggone who knows how many years as I keep on saying there are alternatives that are not only not on the table, but they're constantly being under attack? And so these folks don't want a solution for obvious reasons, because it doesn't make them money. They are taking you to war over oil. They're taking you to war over resources. You're rushing to the fuel station because you're panic buying to get fuel because there is a scarcity because of some supposed terrorist attack somewhere. They had to jack the prices up on you. So yeah, carbon scam is ripping you off. And unfortunately, as rude as it sounds, your ignorance is ripping you off as well. Ignorance is no excuse when it comes down to all the solutions that are constantly ignored. Flat out ignored. You can run a diesel engine off of hemp seed oil. It'll run better. It'll run cleaner. It doesn't have all the detergents and all the craziness in it. And you can't use it. You can't use it. That's what they tell you. Now what? Let's get some more fear-mongering under our belt.
Weaning ourselves off fossil fuels is a slow and expensive business. But there is a fossil fuel that is fairly cheap and...
Pause. Weaning yourself off of fossil fuels is a slow and expensive business. How does the average Joe compete with a trillion-dollar industry that has lobbyists and people who are out there preaching global warming as if it's some sort of one-world religion and basically lying and stealing from the masses while organized criminal syndicates are running the system and just making out like a bandit? You can go out there if you know how to do it and you can make money off of carbon speculations and buying and selling and trading carbon credits. You don't see anything wrong with that?
Also plentiful. Natural gas. Our existing sources of energy are running out, but also polluting and warming our planet. Are we heading for crisis point?
Pause. In the video, they show in the background an oil well burning because somebody decided it was a good idea to light it on fire. All right, well, that's not polluting, is it? All right, let's just keep rolling.
In an energy-starved world, natural gas is becoming an increasingly attractive alternative for generating energy. It emits half the carbon of coal and one-third the carbon of oil. Demand for gas is growing. But in its gaseous state, it's expensive to transport, so it's compressed 600 times and cooled, becoming a liquid gas known as LNG. One giant tanker can hold 36 million gallons of LNG in pressurized tanks, enough to power a city like Boston, Massachusetts for a week. But a tanker is extremely dangerous. LNG explosions are a firefighter's nightmare. Lancashire, England. Firefighters train for an LNG accident. The freezing liquid doesn't burn, but as it pours out of a ruptured container, it vaporizes and spreads uncontrollably. Now the gas cloud becomes highly volatile. Once ignited, it burns at 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit, twice as hot as petroleum.
If you had a large gas spill and ignited, what's going to stop you initially getting too close to the fire is the radiated heat, which you can feel on your face now.
The surrounding air becomes so heated, firefighters can't get close. This is just a small training fire. An accident in a busy port would involve millions of gallons of LNG.
That would be a potential bomb. I would imagine it's a firefighter's worst nightmare for something like that to happen in a harbour in the middle of a city.
At present, there are 11 ports that handle LNG tankers in the US. The one in Boston is in the heart of the city. Candice Kelshall is an expert in maritime terrorism. Her research has revealed that LNG tankers could become a target for future terrorist attacks.
The most likely scenario would be that you would have an officer who would have quite a few years under his belt, been at sea, knows LNG ships, is familiar with the environment at sea, and has become radicalized and now has a suicide mission planned.
Such a scenario occurred in 1999. An Egyptair 767 traveling from New York to Cairo crashed off Cape Cod. The cause was never determined, but experts believe it could have been a radicalized co-pilot on a suicide mission. A suicide mission in a city harbor would be catastrophic, affecting tens of thousands. MIT professor and former chairman of the Massachusetts Port Authority, James Fay, published a report outlining the dangers of an LNG explosion in Boston Harbor.
You just have to look at the population of people out of doors in space like this. Anyone within a half mile of the waterfront could be hurt.
...2015, Boston Harbor. A 1,000-foot tanker carrying 33 million gallons of LNG sails at 5 knots, just over walking pace, into Boston Harbor. Close by is downtown, East Boston, Logan Airport and Charlestown, all densely populated. As is normal, when an LNG tanker approaches the harbor, no other traffic is allowed on the water. Security is tight.
Helicopters are overhead, the roads are closed on the side, bridges are closed. There is a moving security cordon on either side of the vessel.
But the massive security presence is looking the wrong way. A radicalized crew member has planted a bomb next to one of the LNG tanks.
It doesn't take very much to blast a very big hole in the side of a tanker.
The bomb's explosion splits the side of one of the tanks and the LNG pours out. It ignites, rupturing the other tanks.
Once that occurred, then you're looking at what would be the most catastrophic thing, which would be a cascade failure of each of the tanks.
Thousands of tons of liquid gas pour into the water.
The LNG comes in contact with what it would regard as red-hot liquid. It is so cold compared to the water that it just turns into vapor.
The LNG expands 600 times as it vaporizes. Wind carries the vast vapor cloud towards downtown Boston. The cloud erupts in a fireball 1,000 feet high. A vast thermal radiation wave pulses through the city. This isn't fire, but heat from the explosion, so hot that it ignites anything in its path.
That circle identifies the region within which there would be harmful radiation to anyone on the shore.
The gas would only burn for 15 minutes, but would be long enough to devastate the city.
That's an enormous fire. We've never seen anything like that, and I hope we never do.
But as long as LNG is shipped into harbors like Boston, the threat remains all too real.
Trying to run this kind of business in old, crowded ports where a lot of people live nearby has got to go. We've got to get the danger offshore, and then there's no problem.
So not only do you got to worry about climate change, climate disruption, or global warming because you're using the fuel, now you also got to worry about terrorists deciding in order to terrorize people, they need to blow up these big tankers that are running around everywhere. So you're going to war over the same exact fossil fuel. You're going the poorhouse because you got to keep paying higher prices for it every time some terrorist decides he wants to try to blow up a tanker, and you got to rush to the doggone fuel station in a panic so that you can buy fuel. Never mind the fact that the science shows that you can make fuel out of just about everything under the doggone sun. And so if you had a little mini refinery at your house that you could build just like a regular generating system, you could have your own fuel and clean your yard up at the same exact time. Never mind all those facts because of what this guy said right here.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name it, whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
Yep, they'll pass it on to you. Not only is the medical industry poisoning you and the chemistry industry out there genetically destroying nature's perfection, you know, you got people out there trying to genetically modify diseases and weaponize them. You got people out there trying to get you to go to war over resources. You got the scam artists and the criminal syndicates running everything. You got the average Joe running around with their one world global warming religion, preaching the gospel to everybody and telling us that doomsday is on its way. And you got terrorists out there that are promoting blowing stuff up. Maybe they should be out protesting the terrorists. Stop blowing stuff up. We're trying to clean up the planet or something. You know? So, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm just one guy with jacked up hair. I'm a mad science dude who sees the truth of the matter and had actually paid attention in science class and even had the gall to question whatever it was that I disagreed with because mechanically, in my mind, it didn't make any sense. But they're not promoting that type of thinking in today's school system. They're basically wanting people to become worker drones, zombies, so to speak. So if they can keep you sick, they can make money. If they can keep you at war, they can make money. If they can keep you out there protesting in the street, they can make money. They're making money off of every single thing you do and charging you extra for it. So yeah, it's a scam. Carbon scam is ripping you off, flat out. So, you know, let's see what else we got going on here.
But while this would address the problem of safety, it does nothing to change the fact that gas is a fossil fuel and harmful to the environment. To address the growing need for cleaner energy, planners are going back to the future and are looking once more at nuclear power. We are now in a desperate race to secure enough energy to power our future.
No, we're not.
As the threat of global warming increases, there is growing pressure to reduce carbon emissions, forcing governments to reconsider nuclear energy.
Right now, if I looked at the technology for coal and technology for nuclear and environmentally its impacts, well, only one of them has no carbon emissions, so I would quite frankly favor nuclear.
It is estimated that over 500 nuclear plants in 30 countries will be in operation by 2025, despite the long shadows that hang over nuclear power. In 1979, a partial meltdown at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania led to the release of radioactive gases. Then, in 1986, a disastrous accident in the Soviet power plant at Chernobyl led to the deaths of up to 500,000 people. This confirmed the worst fears of the anti-nuclear lobby. But the tide is turning. Energy planners now believe the nuclear industry has learned its lessons.
We now know how to operate nuclear power plants in a safe way. The designs are far safer than the Chernobyl, and far safer than actually Three Mile Island design.
But one problem persists: the safe disposal of the nuclear fuel rods, which remain lethal for centuries.
If this rod had been just withdrawn from a reactor, it would be so intensely radioactive that my survival rate would be less than 1/30th of a second.
John Large is a world-renowned nuclear scientist.
The unsolved problem is the back end of the nuclear process. What do you do with the intensely radioactive fuel once it's served its purpose in the reactor?
Nuclear waste is transported in specially designed flasks that are tested to the limit. Tests like these proved the flasks could survive a 100-mile-per-hour train collision. They are also designed to withstand a fire burning at 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes, with the fuel rods shielded in water-filled compartments. But according to John Large, that may be their fatal flaw.
I was concerned about the thermodynamic performance of this, because if it's on fire, there's no way of venting the excess pressure buildup that occurs. This flask is full of water, so it turns into a pressure cooker.
Such conditions could occur in a railway tunnel fire. July the 18th, 2001, Baltimore, Maryland. Population 600,000. A 60-car freight train laden with flammable chemicals derails inside the Howard Street Tunnel, resulting in an inferno. Physicist Dr. Marvin Reznikov investigated what would have happened if nuclear flasks had been involved in the tunnel fire.
Some of the cars were glowing reddish-orange, and that would tell us that the fire would have to be around 1,500 or 1,600 degrees Fahrenheit.
Nuclear waste flasks can withstand temperatures like that for only half an hour. The Baltimore tunnel fire lasted 5 days. John Large has calculated what could happen if such a disaster struck one of the world's biggest cities. London, England, July 2015. Spent nuclear fuel from a Magnox reactor is en route to the world's largest reprocessing plant at Sellafield in England. It makes a routine rail journey through the heart of London. The train approaches a half-mile-long tunnel north of the city centre. In the darkness, a badly maintained track buckles, derailing the train. Fortunately, the protective flasks are intact. But before the train's crew can raise the alarm, a freight train laden with oil rumbles into the tunnel, plowing head-on into the derailed train. A spark ignites the spilt fuel. The tunnel's brick walls act like a furnace. Temperatures rise to 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. Fire crews constantly assess the radiation levels. They know it's time to evacuate.
Pressure that builds up, and builds up very rapidly in about an hour and a half into the fire, would be sufficient to actually break the glass open, enable the fuel particles to be broken up, released into the atmosphere.
Even though only 1% of the radioactive fuel is likely to be released, it's all it takes to create a deadly plume over London. The weather dictates the number of people exposed, which could be up to 700,000. There may not be any immediate deaths, but during the next 50 years, thousands of Londoners could die as radioactive elements like cesium and plutonium lead to cancers. The decontamination operation is immense.
So, are you scared yet? Are you paranoid? That's what this system promotes, this kind of stuff. All these different, we got to get the green energies, we got to get to zero point and all this kind of stuff. We got to get away from fossil fuels and nuclear power and all this craziness. And in the process of all this, ignoring everything about real science, and after everybody hears all this kind of stuff, they're willing to accept what this man said.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
So, it's back to consumer again. Carbon scam is ripping you off, and if you don't know that by now, you're obviously not paying attention. And no matter how loud I shout in all different directions, the solutions are on the table, the solutions are on the table, the solutions are on the table. Why are the solutions being ignored? And so on and so forth. This is why mad science exists. This is why, you know, I'm constantly aggravated because you had people that said that doomsday was on around the corner and we had to solve this, even though I knew that doomsday wasn't coming, that nature already had things in control. Even though I knew it, I offered them the solutions and basically the world spit in my eye. And could I guess could have been worse, because all the other alternative energy people out there were called scammers and, you know, jailed and all this kind of stuff, and some of them were suicided. And, you know, it goes without saying that even in the medical industry, holistic doctors mysteriously getting killed, and, you know, the whole hemp industry, all the different products that actually could be made out of hemp that aren't being made out of hemp, you know, including oil that could actually run a expensive farm tractor like a Kubota. You go buy you a Kubota, it could cost you $14,800 for a really nice machine that you can get them to run on diesel or gasoline or whatever you're choosing. But, you know, a diesel engine will run pure hemp seed oil. So what's the deal? There's folks that go out and they get French fry oil from different restaurants, and they mix it with a 50-50 mix with the doggone diesel fuel, and they run their doggone diesel engines off of it. I know personally people who actually do that, turn waste oil into fuel again. But that, none of that's factored into the situation. None of the fact that, you know, people have actually shown how to turn plastics, which are petroleum-based, back into more of what they call fossil fuel. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. But, you know, there comes a time when the people have to, you know, say enough is enough. But I don't think that they want to say enough is enough, because I think that they're so addicted to this deal. They got the Stockholm Syndrome. They're in love with their prison guard and stuff. Their captor, the person that turned around and, you know, kidnapped them or whatever. And so they have the Stockholm Syndrome for their governments and their representation and the supposed teachers and scientists of the world. Yeah, they're in love with them. And they go out there and preach the gospel of the one world religion called global warming and climate change and climate disruption, which is, you know, strategically has multiple names because it's not based on real science, and it doesn't match up with the weather outside. So if it's cold outside, it could be climate disruption or climate change. It can't be global warming when it's freezing, you know, it's snot sickles to your face. If you got 20 inches of snow on the deal that you have to shovel off just so you can get out of your driveway and use some of that fossil fuel to go to work, you know, which when you get to work, they're also using fossil fuels. They're using, you know, electricity and, you know, natural gases and stuff to run their machineries and all that. So the hypocrisy of the whole thing is that no matter what, I mean, he just said that one zero emission plant basically captures the carbon and then sells it for cold cash to reuse to go get more fossil fuel. Now, I may have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. And I'm not as stupid as I look. But how is it that every time I sit here and point these things out over and over and over and over and over again, nobody takes it seriously? So what's the point? You know, it's like if Pete and Repeat is in a boat and Pete falls out, who'd be left? How many times can you repeat that? It's ridiculous, folks. It's flat out ridiculous. I blame the environmentalists just as much as I blame the con artists and the scammers and the criminal syndicates that are behind the scenes and the lobbyists and the senators and the congressmen and the mayors and all the different individuals who are parts of this scam, which there are so many tentacles of the carbon scam, it's just mind-blowing. Even in the recycling industry, recycling has become a complete and utter joke. Nobody recycles like they should recycle, otherwise we wouldn't even be having this conversation, because you can recycle that over and over and over and over and over again. Nature does. Nature's been doing it since the dawn of time. So why don't we? If you want to use this energy in a clean and respectful manner, then pay attention. You know, I'm in the process of building my new lab. I've almost got it done. I got to get the walls finished on it. I got to get the flooring in there. And I got to get the workbenches up. And whenever I get this accomplished, I'm going to, if I still have a YouTube channel, if they haven't done kicked me to the curb, I'm going to start showing things that if people pay attention to, that they're really going to be satisfied with the outcome. I've gone through great expense not just to do this radio show and keep these networks alive, but I've also invested a lot of time and effort into trying to share with people the solutions that they claimed that they had. The solutions to the problems that they claimed that they had. Now, I'm getting closer, but I'm slowed down by my finances, so when I get my finances straightened up, I'll get the materials, I'll finish the deal, and so as soon as I can get my lab finished and get it up and running, I'll have live stream videos for you, I'll have YouTube videos for you, and I'll continue to do the radio broadcast, and I'll show you the proof of what I've been saying all along. This whole supposed energy crisis has been a lie. The carbon scam is of epic proportions, and it's ripping you off in so many different directions, it's mind-blowing. It costs you more money for every single thing that you purchase as a consumer because of this mess. And until people realize what's going on, until they lose the fear of an oil-based economy that's going to continue to deteriorate, and at any given time, they could collapse in order to get you under another system that gives them yet even more control. But if you take control now, then you won't have that problem. You can build your own economy using things naturally recycled, just like nature does, and still be able to save yourself some doggone money on fuel cost. If you don't know that you're the pawn in the game of chess that these wealthy individuals and corrupt entities are actually running the governments of the world and the companies and the corporations, then you're just at a loss. You got to know what you're up against if you're going to fight against it. And you got to know that there are solutions available if you're going to solve the so-called energy crisis. If you're going to solve the so-called pollution of the carbon, the CO2 and such. Never mind the fact how many different uses CO2 has to do with industry. And you personally. I put the facts on the table, folks. I put the facts on the table in a way that there are irrefutable facts. And I have challenged all the environmentalists of the world. Come sit down at the table. Let's have a talk. I have challenged the scientists. I've challenged the senators, the congressmen. I've threw the gauntlet down and challenged anyone who wants to come to the table and tell me why it's not possible to resolve what they said was a problem. You know what? To this very day, no one has showed up. No one, with the exception of trolls, agitators, and people who want to tell me how stupid I am. That's it. No one. No one came to the table who had any kind of pull out there or any kind of say in a public forum. No one. No one who sit there and preaches the religion of global warming has come to the table because they don't want to hear what I have to say. Because for what I'm saying to them, it is blasphemy. We got to save our planet, even if it means ripping our families off. That's what they believe in. And the ends don't justify the means whenever you're going to go to war and kill one another over something that nature has provided so incredibly abundant that you're never, ever, ever, ever going to see a day when you do not have energy. When you do not have what they like to call fossil fuel. A Kubota farm tractor with a loader? $14,800. You can go on eBay and you can buy one. You could run that on pure hemp seed oil. You could run it on vegetable oil. You could run it on biodiesels. All of which you can make with stuff that is in your yard that you normally bag up and you have to pay extra to get rid of it because it's yard waste. It's not like regular recyclables according to the system. Yet nature recycles it. Nature makes dirt. Nature makes fertilizer. Nature makes all kinds of stuff. Everything that we think is obnoxious, leaves falling on the ground, it becomes part of the ground. It becomes part of the trees. It becomes part of the plant. Nature is a perfect recycler. And until people get that through their thick head, they're going to continue to pay the man for something that nature would preferably leave on the ground to mix that chemistry back in to make more stuff. Nature is the great provider. And I feel like we got a creator out there that was smart enough to know that we ain't even smart enough to take care of ourselves, let alone each other. So how are we going to take care of this world? You think you're powerful? You think humans are powerful? We can't even get our act together. And we're supposedly powerful enough to overcome nature? Not by a long shot. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And if you fool Mother Nature once, you won't do it a second time, because Mother Nature will come back with the ultimate vengeance. So we're being robbed with our money. You don't even have real silver coins anymore. They're made out of junk. It's monopoly money. It's not even based on anything. It's based on fossil fuel. That's why they call it the petrodollar and the petrol economy. And you're being robbed. You're being ripped off. You're being stolen from. You're being lied to. You're being used as cannon fodder for somebody else to be able to use that monopoly money to stay in power. And that's why mad science exists. That's why. Because I'm tired of seeing my family, your family, and the people of the world suffering needlessly for something that is a lie. It's a bold-faced lie. Teachers ought to be ashamed of themselves for teaching global warming, climate change, climate disruption, and fear-mongering the children into ditching school and going out there protesting in the streets. Mothers and fathers ought to be ashamed of themselves for allowing these students, these children, to go to government indoctrination centers where they're going to be lied to, propagandized, and brainwashed into believing all this trash. It's not real science. And it's never been real science. It was a scam put in place to make somebody a wealthy person, to make entities out there powerful. Trillions of dollars going to the energy industry. And they said, oh, that money was going to go back. It's going to be redistributed to the poor. The poor can't even afford medicine. They can barely afford food. They can't afford the electricity or the gas. You will go ask a poor person how many times that their utilities have been shut off. You go try to beg and plead to the utility company to turn your power back on because you don't have the money right now to do it. If you can't go out and play on the mercies of somebody else and have them be willing to help you with the finances, you won't get your electricity back on. You won't get your utilities back on. They have no heart. They don't care about you. They care about the bottom line. And that's why it is that I do what I do. Because the lie that is being told out there is of biblical proportions. And it's stealing from everybody in the world. And it makes it so that the average Joe has to have two people in the family working, which takes away from the time that I spent with the children. So the children go to the government babysitters, which are the school teachers, who then in turn indoctrinate them into the lies and the propaganda and brainwash them into believing that they are useless and powerless and need to grow up to comply to the system and become great workers. But nobody listens to a voice of reason. And that's why we're in the shape that we're in. That's why we're under these circumstances. And that's why they're able to fearmonger us and continue to get by with everything that they're doing that is beyond illegal. It's beyond criminal.
Sewers, water systems, and green areas are closed until safety is established. Streets and buildings washed down. Some areas could be contaminated for thousands of years. Sue sooner or later, spent fuel now stored on site at U.S. nuclear plants will need to be moved, putting American cities at risk. Yet the growing need to fill the air forced the nuclear option back on the table.
I think nuclear power has to play a significant role. As we transition to renewables, it's going to take some time. So I think it is a part of our mix.
Nuclear power could offer a short-term solution. But could we harness the power from the rivers of the world to provide an endless, clean source of energy? Our hunger for carbon-based energy is destroying our planet. We must find cheap and safe solutions to answer our energy needs, and many believe that the answer is water. It is a resource that is found on every continent. Combine water with gravity, and you have an infinite source of clean, green energy, hydroelectric power. But the giant dams needed to hold back the water have an environmental cost, reducing the flow and damaging the ecosystem downstream. And if a dam ever collapses, the death toll can be shocking. In 1975, a 50-foot wave killed 230,000 Chinese when the Bankio Dam failed.
It was a typhoon that overwhelmed the dam. But we've got to be able to anticipate those kind of storms and make sure that they're designed properly for those extreme loads, especially when you have extreme consequences.
But despite the risks, China, Argentina, Congo, India, Vietnam, and Mexico are all planning massive super dam projects. This is La Yesca in western Mexico. When it's complete, this hydroelectric dam on the Santiago River will be one of the tallest in the world, more than 700 feet.
How you doing, Barry?
Good, Shazuz. How you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm pretty good, I think.
Yeah. I take it you're still on the air?
Yeah, we got about 15 minutes left of the show.
Well, I was listening to it earlier, and then I had got pulled away, and I was in conversations with a bunch of people here, so I haven't been listening in for the last 45 minutes. So I don't know what you've been talking about, but the first little bit there, I thought that was pretty good. I hear you had Barack Obama in the room today. You hit the big time.
Yeah, he said under his plan.
Well, you know you made the big time when Barack joins your show, so congratulations, Shaziz.
Yeah.
And,
do you know that hemp seed oil could run a Kubota farm tractor?
Yes, I know that.
Well, you know, you think the industry knows that you could run a Kubota farm tractor with hemp seed oil?
They don't want you to know that.
Of course they don't want you to know that. I don't know why, but...
Well, Henry Ford was going to run all his vehicles off an ethanol-based hemp product.
Yeah.
It was pretty efficient and doesn't create carbon, non-polluting, non-interfering. Which could be better, man.
Well, that's the whole entire thing. All the solutions that are available to what they like to call fossil fuel, which is a big lie, but nonetheless, all of the solutions are constantly ignored or poo-pooed or debunked or whatever, including hydrogen technology.
Well, buddy, you know, why isn't the world embracing the hydrogen cell? In the whole world should be embracing the hydrogen cell because it works.
Yeah.
And the more it was brought forward, the easier it would be to produce. We could have every vehicle, every motorized vehicle in the world running off a hydrogen cell.
The thing and about it is, how do you get the average Joe out of that cult, one world religion like global warming and climate change and climate disruption? How do you get the disciples of global warming to, you know, give up their religion?
That's a tough one, because people have an automatic defense mechanism, and if they are pointed out that they're wrong, immediately their shackles come up.
Yeah.
And that's indoctrinated into our minds that once we're right, we're right, and nothing else is right, and we're right, and that's it. So until we can get people out of that mindset, I don't know, because the facts are out there that this whole global warming crap is just a crap. It's just It's a scam.
Well, the thing about it is they said there was a problem. When guys like myself and you come together with solutions, like you talked about things like hempcrete and other products, like I think you mentioned one time 50,000 products could be made with industrial hemp, yet you can't get it on the market because of the way that they have everything regulated.
Yeah, well, they're not going to let anything come forward that's actually beneficial.
Yeah.
Nothing, anything that doesn't make them money, anything that threatens their paradigm of control, they will stop.
Yeah, well, that's why Mad Science exists, because I'm watching, you know, the carbon scam is ripping you off. It's ripping me off. It's ripping our kids off. It's ripping the world off. And the people out there who call themselves environmentalists, they're the ones promoting the whole doggone thing. Okay, I get moving to clean, renewable alternative energies, but at the same sense, you're sitting there promoting the doggone same system that you claim to want to be up against. They don't care about you. They don't care about, you know, the truth of the matter. You know, if we needed to make, there's some, you realize how many different nuts could be cold pressed and make oil out of them?
Yeah. There's all kinds of things out there that we could do. I mean, it's just unlimited.
Yeah.
If we really started developing the amount of energy that's available to us, which is their scam, would be right out the door,
yep.
And they know it.
You're right.
And they will do everything they can to keep this from the public, but eventually it's going to get out. Eventually people will go, wait a second, hold on, and the lights will go on.
Well, I'm waiting for that day. That's going to be a glorious day there.
I think that day's coming because, I mean, there's a guy now in town here just put solar panels on his roof, and he's producing 7.5 kilowatts
of power
consistently. And he set it all up. It cost him, what did he tell me? His name is Andrew Neiman, or Andrew, Newhouse is his last name. It cost him for the roof panels, the solar roof panels, I think it was $14,000 for the panels. They have a 30-year life expectancy. He's buying them out of a company in Ontario. I'm going to post a link here for you.
Cool.
But the batteries and the inverters and everything else, he told me he had $21,000 tied up. He's producing 7.5 kilowatts consistently, which is a normal house requires 5.
Well, even at that, that's a brilliant deal because, you know, it's free energy once you got the system in place. But there's a company out there that went and they actually built a factory or a power plant that it has zero emissions. But then, after they get through explaining how they have zero emissions because they're capturing this carbon, now they got to figure out a way to get rid of this carbon. Guess what they're doing with it? They're selling it for cold cash to people who are doing fracking. They're selling the CO2 to the oil industry so that they can pull more gas and oil out. So zero emissions, hey, don't worry, it's all by the carbon credits. You know, you can pollute over there as long as you got extra credits. You can, you know, sell those credits to somebody else, which has opened up so many different scams that it's mind-blowing. But nonetheless, a zero-emissions power plant that is capturing the CO2 and then turn around and reselling that CO2 so that they can crack open the ground and get out more of what they like to call fossil fuel.
Right. So the thing about these solar panels, these roof panels, she says, if you put a conventional roof on the house, the $14,000 he spent on the panels, it's just, I think it was about $2,000 more than putting a normal roof on the house. So when he breaks it down, he's got about $9,000 tied up, and he's got a new roof. But the thing, after about 3 years, I think it was 3 years and 6 months, he'll be getting free energy for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and that's what
anybody building a new house. Anybody who's building a new house right now, it would be a no-brainer to put these in there. And more and more people, he's got people stopping by and looking and asking questions. Well, I take my hat off to the guy, and this is going to come. And of course, the more it's developed, the cheaper it's going to get. It's like anything else.
Yep.
Big screen TVs were like $4,000 when they came out. Now you can go down to Walmart and get one for $369.
And thanks to the Chinese and their ingenuity, they're actually making solar panels more efficient and better. And a lot of people like to crack on the Chinese and the way that they make stuff, but I guarantee you, if you go to China to buy a screwdriver, it's not going to be like the junky one you buy at the dollar store, because they make them right over there. And they said that the reason why they make them as cheap as they do is because the companies that buy from them from here want them to cut corners so that they can buy a cheap product. So what's the point of buying a screwdriver if the first time you use it, it's going to turn twist up like butter?
But it was only 84 cents, man.
Yeah, it's only 84 cents.
So they have to buy American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See? That's the whole thing. But, you know, everybody wants to blame the Chinese for it. It ain't Chinese fault. You know, it, look, if you're buying it, they're going to sell it. That's the whole thing. And this is this lie that we call the carbon emissions thing, that we got to reduce our carbon footprint. This lie, these folks are really buying it. You got hardcore disciples of the one world religion called global warming that will get angry, and some of which actually preach that they want you to go to prison for being a denier.
Well, they better explain the winter you're about to have in the States, because the forecasts are for a brutally cold, cold winter.
Yeah, it's cold right now.
We have record low temperatures in Canada last night, or a couple days ago, record low temperatures across the country.
That's
the Okanagan beat records set in 1894.
That's why I said they got three separate names.
That's where we're from, folks.
That's why I said they got three separate names for climate change. Is global warming, climate change, climate disruption. So whatever the weather is, if it don't match up, it's not global warming. If it's cold outside, it's not global warming. It's climate change or climate disruption. So they've got it all figured out. And how could you deny that the climate changes? Because depending on where you live, one minute it's raining, the next minute it's not. You see what I mean?
Whatever the flavor of the day, they just grab it and run, man.
Yeah, but in the process, they're promoting...
It's just started a couple times now.
Yeah, in the process, they're promoting the carbon scam that is ripping you and me and everybody and his brother and our children off. You've got families that can't even afford food. You got families that can't afford electricity. Go to the power company and tell them how poor you are and you need free electricity. See what they tell you.
Well, we know what it's designed to do. So the end game is to bring the third world nations, bring Canada and the United States into being a third world nation. They're going to destroy our economies. You got this Greta Thunberg running around the world telling us we all got to stop using oil.
Oh, yeah.
Die in 12 years.
She says, how dare you? How dare you?
Dare you? And now we got children that are so depressed because they're being told that the world's going to end in 12 years. They got no future.
Yep.
I mean, it's just absolute crap that's going on, and it's all being perpetrated by an agenda, and it's working, unfortunately.
Now you know why mad scientists...
Those sheeple that don't think for themselves, she says, that they jump off the bandwagon, and you see what's going on with the young people. They all want to, you know, when you were going to school and I was going to school, we wanted to be accepted, right? We wanted to be part of the group, right? You don't want to be rejected, so of course you're going to jump on this. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to come. Yeah, I get a day off school, I go downtown and protest. Sign me up, guys, and think about it. When you're in school, you didn't jump all over this, because we didn't know.
Yeah.
They turned the weakest part of society, they turned that part of society against us. Hitler did it prior to the Second World War. Look what he did prior to the Second World War. He manipulated the youth. The youth manipulated society. The same thing is happening here.
I tell you one thing's for sure. When I was going to school and they started talking about the hole in the ozone layer, I didn't buy the lie. I got to looking into research, and then I realized it was a lie. And every time I told people it was a lie, they thought I was nuts. Because, well, you know, the scientists say, NASA says, I don't trust either one of them.
Well, it was on CNN, she said, so it's got to be true.
Oh, sure. Because yeah, CNN wouldn't never lie to anybody, would they? Well, Barry, it's been fun, but it's time for me to get up out of there and get ready for the Music with Kara Hour. You got any shows coming up you want to throw out there for anybody?
Actually, you know, today at 1 p.m. Pacific time, I have Alex Newman, who's an award-winning journalist, writes for the Free American, and he's going to join me today, and we're going to talk about the United Nations. And I'm not allowed to promote my station when other stations are fruit in there, but people can find me on Facebook under The Big Puzzle, and my show is listed for today, and this guy really captivated my attention when he talked to me first time, So I'm kind of looking forward to talking to him today, Shaliz.
Well, I'll tell you what, don't forget to mention how the United Nations is a real big part of the carbon scam and is ripping a lot of people off.
He was going to dissect that today for us. This is his expertise, Shaliz, this gentleman's expertise is the United Nations, and that's what we're going to talk about for now at PM today. So should be fun.
Well, folks, they got their one world religion. It's here. It's called global warming, climate change, climate disruption. It comes under many faces and under many scams. So, you know, there's a criminal syndicate out there that like to make money, and that's how they do it. They lie to you. They scare your children and tell them about doomsday and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, with that said, the only way to get this message out is, you know, pass some links. Share this podcast with somebody. If you like this podcast, rebroadcast this podcast. Do whatever it takes to get the word out. There are solutions available. The carbon scam is real, and it's ripping you off. And I, like I said, Barry, I threw down the gauntlet to all the scientists out there and all the environmentalists and all the representation. You know, not one single individual has showed up to the table that wasn't just showing up long enough to tell me how stupid I am.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm stupid, go out there and prove that all these links that we posted out here are stupid as well. All the solutions available, all the science. Let's see it. I ain't seen it. I ain't seen nobody debunk what I had to say. I seen some personal attacks, but never seen anybody come out there to prove it wasn't real. You just explain how this guy, when he pays off these doggone solar panels, will have free energy the rest of his life. That's pretty impressive.
Just under 4 years, he calculated, based on his hydro pays right now, what he's paying hydro.
Yep, so. And I wish that for more people. I wish that more people. Well, I've almost got my lab done. I got to, you know, do some things to the walls and some things to the floor and then put in some workbenches. But when I get this new lab, folks, brace for impact. And you might want to watch my back, because the things I'm going to show in this new lab are not going to make people happy. I guarantee that. You've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Go over there and say hi to People for People Radio Network, and take care. Share this podcast if you really care about the planet.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Magic Meeting.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.